Thank you, Ellen, and thanks everyone for attending this session. As Ellen said, my name is Pat Carr. I'm at North Dakota State University. I would like to acknowledge Greta Gramig. Greta is a weed ecologist, also at North Dakota State University, located in Fargo. I'm at Dickinson. I think we all are aware of the fact that tillage is a primary, or at least a very important weed control tool in most, if not all, organic farms of any size. But I think we also are aware of the fact that tillage, especially if it's done aggressively, can result in several negative consequences. And in places like North Dakota or Montana, one thing we try to do is avoid any type of practice which is going to reduce soil water content or increase evaporation. I think it's because of those reasons that there actually has been quite a lot of interest for several years in adopting conservation tillage practices in organic systems. Nancy Kramer and Robert Morse and others published results of early studies looking at the potential for organic no-till or zero-till back in the mid-1990s. But there's clearly been a resurgence recently in organic zero-till or no-till systems. Now, this is not an exhaustive list, but this is just the number of papers published in Agronomy Journal alone since 2008. And as I said, there's probably some papers and additional papers that I missed focusing on the potential of organic zero-till or no-till. I think another indication of the interest in organic zero-till is the publication by Jeff Moyer in 2011, where Jeff talked about his experience, as well as those of growers that he worked with, in organic zero-till. I was really glad to hear, I don't need to say some of this because of the past couple speakers, and Claire in particular, but those of us who are working in this, and I know many in this room have been or are working in this area, when we talk about zero-till or no-till in organic systems, we're talking typically about rotational or phase no-till. So in a corn, soybean, wheat rotation, you know, at the least in terms of tillage, maybe there's no tillage during the corn phase, a zero-till during the soybean phase, but then during the wheat phase, you till the soil. Now, what we're attempting to do in North Dakota, and others are as well, is we're actually attempting to practice zero-till continuously across all phases of the rotation, much like conventional no-tillers. Think about no-till back in North Dakota. So our objective is to go all the way and eliminate tillage in an organic system. Now, whether it's an organic phase or rotational no-till system or a continuous system, cover crops are relied on quite heavily to produce the amount of mulch necessary to suppress at least some annual weeds. And kind of the target that's been thrown out there over the years is about 5,500 kilograms per hectare of cover crop mulch as a minimum. Let's see. Well, the bar graph or the histogram on the left is a result of, or it shows results of one of our studies. You can see on the x-axis the years 2008 through 2011. The bars indicate the amount of killed cover crop mulch resulting after rolling crimping. And what you'll notice if you see that black line, that thin black line, that's kind of that threshold value, we tended not to hit that. Whereas in 2010 and 2011, we rarely failed to hit that or produce more dry matter. And I think this really is a good reflection of what Steve Mirsky, among others, have talked about. There's still a lot of basic agronomy that we need to learn about this. And things that work in places like Pennsylvania and Maine don't necessarily work in places like North Dakota. As we've learned how to do such basic things as plant these cover crops at an appropriate time, we tend to produce the amount of biomass that we need. And that's reflected more in that histogram on the right, where in that case we were looking at different seed lots of hairy vetch, and we always produce more than that minimum threshold. Regardless of how much vegetative mulch you produce, though, and I've actually shown this set of images before, That's an asphalt road. This is established bindweed, and it's growing right through asphalt. If it's going to grow through asphalt, I've got a feeling we're not going to be able to produce adequate amounts of cover crop mulch. So if we have any prayer of developing a continuous organic zero-till system, it's going to require an integrated weed management approach. And so that's what we're attempting to do. We're looking at cover crops and the mulch they produce in combination with a roller crimper and some other innovative technology. We're also looking at competitive crops. We and Perry Miller and others at Montana State, Martin Enns up at the University of Manitoba, have begun to bring in livestock, and I think in all cases we're using sheep to try to target hard-to-kill weed species. Also at Dickinson, at certain strategic times, we do apply, in our case, acetic acid, but we are looking at some application of chemicals which either are labeled, depending on the certification program, or we're hoping might be labeled someday. So we're using every tool we can think of which is allowed or maybe might be allowed in an organic system in order to suppress weeds. At Dickinson, we're doing this in what we call our long-term organic tillage systems study, or LOT study. Everybody's got to have an acronym, so that's ours. The LOT study. Okay, the last few years, we've got a zero-till, a continuous zero-till, a conventional till, and a reduced till system represented, and we're looking at, in particular, 1 5-year rotation, where we've got a hairy vetch cover crop, we seed into that wheat, the second year we harvest the wheat, and if our climate or our weather conditions allow, we'll follow that with a cover crop cocktail. In year three, we plant proso millet, we harvest the millet for grain, and then we plant a winter wheat or a winter rye cover crop. In year four, we plant the navy bean into the rolled crimped winter rye cover crop, and then in year five, we plant field pea, spring field pea, and then we harvest that, and then we repeat the cycle. Now, I'm just going to present just a few data, a few images focused just on wheat and pea, and I think they will tell a story that has developed. Okay, so the image on the left, the upper left of this slide, that's conventional tilled wheat in 2012. On the upper right, that's the no-till or the zero-till wheat in 2012, and this is actually, some of the plots have been in place now 5 years and others in 4 years in terms of the no-till or the zero-till. So next year we'll actually have some zero-till plots that will be year six of organic zero-till. The bottom left is the conventional or the clean till system in 2014. You can see where we've driven the small plot combine through to get a yield sample. And the bottom right is zero-till or no-till wheat in 2014. And as Perry Miller said in a very smart aleck comment in the zero-till plot in 2014, I thought you said this was a wheat plot, because it's hard to see the wheat, but we are growing a lot of prickly lettuce. And also, we've got a very nice green foxtail understory crop going as well. And that kind of has been the story. These are just yields from 2012 through 2014. Actually, by year three, we did start to see quite a yield drag, or have so far, in the zero-till plots compared with the clean-till or the conventional-till plots. If you look at 2012, a little over 1,000 kilograms per hectare in the no-till or the zero-till versus about 2,700 in the conventional-till. But look at this growing season that just ended. About 4,500 kilograms per hectare of wheat in our clean-till plots, which are excellent wheat yields for North Dakota, versus under 800 in our zero-till or our no-till plots. By year four or five, the no-till system, it looks like it's starting to basically fall apart. And even in terms of some of the quality parameters for wheat, grain protein concentration, again, no difference in 2012 and 2013, statistically speaking. By 2014, we also are seeing a reduction in protein. I'm sure a lot of that nitrogen is being taken up by the weeds. Now, this kind of gets to some of the things I was alluding to just a few minutes ago. Okay, again, another image very much set up like the earlier image. That's a hairy vetch plot in 2011. It actually looks pretty good, a lot of hairy vetch. The hairy vetch plot in 2014 going into this growing season, You can see some vetch flowering, but there are a lot of weeds. And one thing we did not anticipate is we thought we had, in terms of the hairy vetch crop, things figured out. We had gotten a hold of a seed lot that was producing hairy vetch seedlings and plants that overwintered until the last couple years. In North Dakota, the last few years, if you've never been to North Dakota, you're all welcome to come to North Dakota. It does get cold, but we don't always get a lot of snow. In the last couple years, we've had very little snow cover, and we've had very high winter kill of our hairy vetch, which hadn't occurred the previous 3 years to the last few. So instead of giving that nice killed cover crop mulch, which you see on the bottom left of this image, we get very little hairy vetch overwintering, and it's not too surprising we get a lot of weeds. This was actually a different field. I finally had the seed lot of hairy vetch that I knew was going to overwinter, so we seeded the hairy vetch to get the seed that we needed to perpetuate that seed lot. That's what our hairy vetch stand looked like in the spring. We basically had 100% winter kill. So I guess, as I say, it's back to the drawing board. Give you an idea of plant stand in terms of how much winter kill we did have. These are the stands that I, plant density. As you can see, going into this last winter in North Dakota and then this past spring, pretty good plant stands going into the winter. Plant stands that are nothing to brag about coming out of the winter. That's the problem. Another thing that we have found in North Dakota is the animals. Now, we've had additional problems with the animals, and I just don't have enough time to tell you about everything. It's been fun, I guess, if you like challenges. But, you know, the animals, we have the animals in there to target weeds, and if they're managed properly, they do a pretty good job. But we did not anticipate that they would do such a good job and also trampling down stubble that when they get done, you can have plots that have very little residue. Well, when it comes to a crop like winter wheat in North Dakota, you've got to have that residue, especially standing residue, to catch the snow you do get, or you're going to have fairly extensive winter kill. So not only have we seen extensive winter kill the last couple of years with hairy vetch, we've seen extensive winter kill with winter wheat. So those were our winter wheat plant density counts this past spring, and you're not going to grow winter wheat when you've got stand counts like that. Those are number of plants per square meter. So in order to try to salvage the wheat plots, we've planted spring wheat, and it's worked quite well. If you remember the data from 2014, we've had very good wheat yields in the spring wheat and the reduced in the conventional till and the reduced till plots. But in the no-till plots, we're trying to plant spring wheat into plots where all of the winter wheat, or most of it, has winter killed, but the winter annual weeds are doing great, and it doesn't work very well. In terms of the peas, very similar story. If you look at 2012 was a dry year, so the pea yields were very low, but there was no significant difference as you looked across the three tillage systems. That's not the case by 2014. Quite a yield drag in our zero-till plots. Again, these have been continuous organic, no-till or zero-till for four to five years. So in conclusion, we have found weed pressure to become extremely severe by years four or five, depending on the plot. That's become a huge problem for us. What we did not anticipate is we think a big reason for that is we've run into overwintering challenges with our cover crop species. So those of you who can control the weather, please send some snow to North Dakota this winter. We also have found that we need to balance some wheat control management needs when using livestock with also their ability to basically deplete those plots of most of the above ground cover, resulting in winter kill with some of our grain. So I'll leave you with, we are going to continue continuous no-till for at least a couple more years if there is any interest. I'm just hoping we have more success. But so far for us in North Dakota, it has been quite a challenge. So those of you who have said you're crazy to try continuous organic zero-till or no-till, I don't really have much of an argument to this point. So thank you very much. If there is a quick question or perhaps comment, I was told there is a little bit of time.
Yeah, I've got a comment.
Yes, Sharon.
You lost your winter wheat. It didn't overwinter. You said your winter annual weeds are doing just fine.
Well, the question was, are we using the wrong cover crop if we're getting all of this winter kill? Well, with hairy vetch, I mean, if this continues, my answer would be, yeah, probably, with hairy vetch, with the germplasm we have available. It's kind of an, I think part of the challenge is we, in North Dakota anyway, in the north, I don't think we have good germplasm. I mean, we're not really breeding for cover crops, and the breeding that is being done, I can tell you, it's not in a place like North Dakota. And an additional, in terms of the winter wheat, without going into great detail, I've been a little frustrated. I mean, we try to source out organic winter wheat cultivars, and we've done that. So far, we've planted, you know, we get it from Albert Lea. If you look at the winter wheat cultivars that are available, they are not the most winter hardy. So there's a big problem with just getting germplasm. But I think your point is a good one. You know, in addition, maybe we need to look at some other species.